Hey, thank you so much. Okay, thanks. I am Pris, short for Priscilla H, and I'm a gratefully recovered food addict, sugar addict, physically recovered, but in all other ways, recovering. And I have note cards. I have to do that, otherwise, I wouldn't even remember my name. So I'd like to start with an alternate serenity prayer that I heard from some other meeting. I don't know what it was, but it goes like this: God, grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, courage to
Courage to
change
change the one I came,
and wisdom to
wisdom to know.
that one is me. Oh, thanks be to God. I don't plan to talk much about food and weight, although I would love to do that, but that's step one. And we had a beautiful talk about step one last month. So my assignment is for February is step two. And actually, I asked Jen if I could speak, if I could be the speaker, because step two has become so very important to me. I'll get some basic questions out of the way, things that people ask me. People say, "Where are you from?" They know I'm not from around here. So I'm from Alabama originally and then lived in West Germany 3 years, compliments of Uncle Sam, and in Florida for close to 50 years, in North Carolina for a little while. And then they don't ask, but they wonder, "How old are you?" And I'm 86 and a half. You remember when you were a little bitty kid and that half year was so important? Well, it gets important again when you're 86, 86 and a half. My maximum weight was 160 and I was gaining rapidly at that point in time. That was in 2012. My weight now is about 118, give or take. I weigh once a day now. I used to weigh maybe 15 times a day. I had an addiction to the scale. My first OA meeting, I do have an anniversary. My first OA meeting was 35 years ago this past Friday. That was not my recovery. Thank you. Not my recovery anniversary, just my first OA meeting. I'd like to read step two again. Because of this being February, the second month. Step two says, came to believe that a power, capital P, greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I like to say that OA is about the food, the eating disorder, or whatever you want to call it, but it's not about the food. It's about a higher power and it's about sanity. Or the lack thereof. So, step one being the introduction to the problem, step two is our lead in to the solution. And I could talk for hours about step two, but 20 minutes? I don't know. I'll do the best I can to talk 20 minutes and share some of the highlights for me from my recovery. I had a strong need and a desire for God. Whoever or whatever that is, from about age 16 on. In fact, I majored in religious education in college, and I was planning to be a missionary of the Christian variety. And then in 1957, I married a sweet guy who wanted to be a medical missionary. Well, we lived on the poverty income level. We had four kids. We were together through pre-med, medical school, internship, residency, 3 years in the army, his fellowship. And finally, after all of that training, we settled in Florida in 1969. We had abandoned the missionary plan, but our family life still centered around religion. Religious services, activities, friends, everything was religion-based, church-based, actually. And I like to say that a person can be religious but not spiritual, or a person can be spiritual but not religious, Or a person can be spiritual and religious. Or a person can be neither spiritual nor religious. I think that knowing religion is knowing stuff about God. And I did. I knew a lot of stuff about what all kind of different people think God is. Today, I think I knew a lot about religion, but I had not much, if any, relationship with God. So in my 30s, I went back to school, the brand new University of North Florida in Jacksonville, and I got a graduate degree in, get this, mental health counseling. Sanity? No. It was not about sanity. I thought I was sane. It was, at that point, it was about religion. I wanted to be a better, more knowledgeable person doing church service in my church. Well, in my late 30s, that whole thing fell apart, and it had to, because I was addicted to religion. So my religion fell apart, and for the next decade, give or take, I was an atheist. And I was an adolescent for the very first time. I didn't go through what you might consider normal adolescence at the age that most people do. So I became an adolescent at age 40, give or take. I ran away from home. I filed for divorce. I became more or less self-supporting. Eventually, I became a homeowner with rental property. And I acted out a lot, a whole lot. Even then, my higher power that I didn't believe in kept me alive and relatively safe. I hired on as a staff member. All of this is leading up to step two now, y'all. I hired on as a staff member for clients who were coming out of the state psychiatric hospital. And about half of those people had substance abuse issues also. That job, I know today, that job was a God thing. For this 40-year-old adolescent atheist, my job put me in a position to learn about Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous for the clients, you know. I read the big book. Probably for the first time in about 1980, and I heard the steps read over and over and over, and I listened to the clients share about what they did with alcohol and drugs, and I would think to myself silently, I did the same things with food that they did with alcohol or other drugs. I had dieted, gained, lost weight, dieted, gained, lost weight many times over, but the diet, in quotes, never lasted. Of course, I could talk about that for the next 30 minutes, but I won't. I'll spare you that. But I was very blasé about step two. I thought when I would hear step two, I would think to myself, obviously, it's obvious. If there's something I can't control, well, it's going to take something more powerful than me to control it. I mean, that just makes sense. And I didn't even think about the last half of it. By 1986, I was 50 years old and not managing my life too well. My house was falling apart. My car was falling apart. My job was falling apart. And my body wasn't doing too well either. And I was lonely. So I decided, what the hell? I'll act as if I believed in a power greater than myself. I'll act as if I believed there was a God. Not a decision to put on an act, but a decision to act as if. And I knew how to do that because of all those meetings, but mostly because of one person who had shared her journey with me. I knew that acting as if meant working my way through the house cleaning steps 4 through 9. So I did that the best I could. And I used the tools of the program the best I could. Back then, I never had any grasp on steps 10, 11, or 12. But 4 through 9, I got that, and I worked the steps the best I could and used the tools the best I could. And within a year, I was married again. I had a new, different job. I had a different home. I had a different car. And now I did begin to believe, hey, maybe there is actually a mysterious higher power that's bringing about a whole bunch of changes in my life. Well, in 1987, I was married to a food addict. He was a recovering alcoholic, but he was also a food addict. And by the grace of God becoming cigarette free, I started gaining weight again. And then I found OA. I went to my first OA meeting the last Friday in January 1988, as I said before. And so it went like that for a few years. I went to OA meetings. I dieted with group support. I've heard that expression over and over. I guess my higher power was actually the group. Always, I wanted to be closer with God. Consciously wanted that, or not consciously. And I was in and out of OA. All that sort of leading up for me now to talking about step 2, which I want to read one more time. Came to believe that a power, capital P, greater than ourselves, could restore us to sanity. Well, for me, it wasn't being restored. It's being introduced to sanity for the first time. I never was sane. But one Saturday afternoon at an OA retreat, I went to a step 2 workshop that changed my life. If anybody wants to know the details about that step 2 workshop, call me. I'll tell you all about it. It didn't get me abstinent still, but I did learn some things about the higher power in my life, about God. What I learned was that my concept of God was a lot like my concept of my parents. The God of my not understanding was kind and responsible, but distant. And I was told that I could have whatever kind of higher power I wanted, just like the big book says in the chapter We Agnostics. Now, I had never had a best friend, never, ever in my whole life had I had anybody that I considered a best friend. So that's what I wanted. I wanted a BFF God. Forget about love. That word can be distorted in so many ways. I wanted a higher power that likes me, a friend, a BFF that wants to be with me all the time. And in that same workshop, I was invited to consider how my higher power would look. What would it look like? Well, I decided that it would look like an invisible cloud, about a tennis ball sized invisible cloud, right up against my forehead. I'm not good at organizing and conducting things. There's some other mental processes that I am good at. I'm not putting myself down, but that's one that I don't have. And so I figured that I needed a higher power who could help me with that, who would help me with that. Now, that function in the human brain occurs right up here in the prefrontal cortex, right inside the skull behind the forehead. So that's why my higher power is right here looking at me, suggesting to me what I need to do, what's the next right thing that I need to do, because I don't know. And so when I pray, I don't do these kind of prayer hands. I do this kind of prayer hand. I put my hand up there and I ask my higher power, my BFF, what am I supposed to do? What's the next right thing? And sometimes, what in the hell is the next right thing? Well, fast forward to 2017, my husband died, husband number 2, And I moved to New Jersey in 2018, and I built this little apartment up over my daughter's garage, and I live alone in it. Some of you have been here even, and I hope the rest of you will come at one time or another when you can. But I live alone, and so it became easier for me to hear in my head the higher power who introduces me to sanity one day at a time. And I know I've got 5 minutes coming.
Yeah, Chris, that's five. Good job. Thank you.
So I began to study the AA Big Book paragraph by paragraph in a daily meeting that a young woman told me about. She knows who she is. I call her my Girl Scout because she helped me across the street. And I'm being introduced to sanity. By my higher power, not restored to sanity. I never was sane. I'm still not, but I'm being introduced to sanity. And I want to try to tell you some of the biggest lessons that my higher power has revealed to me so far. One is, and I won't go into the, I can't go into the details. I don't have time, but one is about muscle memory. And it was revealed to me that what leads up to a binge, the eating of a binge food for me, first of all, is looking at it. I'm a very visual person. And so first I look at it and I say, nah, I don't want any of that. Nah, that doesn't even look good. And then I look at it again and then I look at it again. And eventually my hand just puts it in my mouth. And so it was revealed to me that instead of looking at binge foods, I need to not ever look at them, never, ever look at them. That has made a huge difference for me. The next thing that has made a huge difference, if I don't tell you anything else, I need to tell you this. I woke up one morning, and a lot of this stuff comes through something I hear somebody say in a meeting. I woke up one morning with this rather strange message in my mind. You must ruthlessly cut away that which does not belong to strengthen that which does. And I thought, well, that's interesting. That's kind of weird. And I didn't give it much more thought. The next morning, I woke up with that very same message in my mind. You must ruthlessly cut away that which does not belong to strengthen that which does. And I knew that time, I knew it was a message from my higher power, and I knew what it was about. It was about artificial sweeteners. I grew up on artificial sweeteners back in the day when the only thing that existed was saccharin tablets. My mother somehow knew that too much sugar was not a good thing for us. We had a lot of desserts, but they weren't real sweet desserts. They were fruity things mostly. And she sweetened that iced tea that most Southerners just kind of live on. She sweetened it with saccharin tablets. And then, of course, later on along came the pink packets and the blue packets and the green packets and so forth. And I had a good supply of all of that stuff. Well, when I got that message from God, the second time, I knew I had to get rid of the two huge bottles of saccharin tablets that I had just paid a lot of money for in Florida because I couldn't find it in New Jersey. And I knew I needed to get rid of all those little colored paper packets of powdery, sugary stuff. So I threw it all in the garbage. I took the lid off of the bottles of saccharin tablets because I knew if I threw the whole bottle in the garbage, I might fish it out again. So I took the lid off and I poured them into the tablets, into the garbage. And then I threw all the paper packets into the garbage. And I got to tell you, that was the biggest step for me towards becoming free just for today from my binge foods. Sugary foods are my biggies. Oh, and then maybe the one last thing that is so important is that when I have a food thought, which I do from time to time. I have a food thought. I've learned to ask my higher power up here, what is going on? There's something going on with me that's making me think about food, because that's sugary food. That's been my escape all my life, all of these 80 some odd years. So what's going on? What emotion, what memory, what tasks that I don't want to do, what loss of a person, place, or thing is going on that's making me want to escape into the food thoughts? Today, I rarely pray for anything. Mostly, I pray about things. Once in a while, I pray for something, but I ask God, my BFF, questions. I ask God questions. In fact, I don't know if you can see it, but on my wrist, I have my one tattoo, which I got a few years ago, very few years ago, and it says, ask questions. That's to remind myself to ask questions. So with all of that, so much step two, today God, my BFF, higher power, is helping me to do something I heard in a meeting recently, which is eat to live instead of living to eat. So with that, I'll wrap up. Thanks. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much.